This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to this week's 45th podcast. I'm here this week with Waj. Hey, Waj.
Hey, how's it going?
Not too bad. I think last time you were on the show, Waj, we ended by hoping that we would not have to be discussing Iran next week or the week after that. But I think this is the week that streak finally comes to an end, because there has been too much on the Iran front to avoid an update there and about the situation we're in now and the military conflict that almost but did not quite happen. Before we get to that, though, there's another topic. I think Waj and I, we talked about this last time you were on, when Sarah Sanders announced her, not retirement, but she was leaving the White House.
Yeah, to maybe become governor of Arkansas.
She has denied that. She says that's never happening.
Sure, for now. But yeah, we just got good news right now. Great news is, even though we don't have a Secretary of Defense, it seems that we're going to have a new White House press secretary who's also going to be comms director. So double duty for Melania Trump's spokeswoman, Stephanie Grisham, who is a Trump insider who has just been tapped to get this major new roles replacing Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So now we have three. We had, of course, long live Sean Spicer. Then we had Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And now we have the reign of Stephanie Grisham.
Yeah, so we were speculating last time that maybe Trump won't even fill his position. I mean, why does he need to, for one thing, because there's never press briefings anymore. But the press secretary's job is not just the press briefings, obviously. Otherwise, Sarah Sanders would be gone long ago. But the question is, Stephanie Grisham, when she steps in, how much power will she actually be taking on?
I don't know if she's gonna be actual press secretary, but, like, you know, as mentioned, she's also taking on Bill Shine's former role. Bill Shine, as we
I forgot he existed.
Yeah, remember Bill? So Bill Shine was rewarded for basically helping Roger Ailes set up a culture of sexual harassment at Fox News. He left Fox and then became the White House communications director. He left in March. So she actually has an expanded role, to answer your question. So she's not only going to be the press secretary, she's also going to be comms director. And there is something here, the fact that she's Melania Trump's spokeswoman, and she was actually praised for handling Melania Trump's trip to Africa. If you remember those amazing, glorious photos of Melania Trump wearing, you know, the beautiful hats and stylish clothes in Africa, because Melania, of course, cares so much about what's happening in Africa, in the communities of Africa, which are the countries that are considered shithole countries by President Trump. But I digress. So it's precisely because of her close association with Melania, the fact that she's an insider, like you said, the fact that she apparently did a really great job with Melania's trip in Africa and how she, you know, handled the press and basically, you know, navigated that. And the fact that she's now press secretary and comms director, I actually think she might be more influential. And she's basically going to come out and be a propagandist for the Trump administration. Maybe they've learned their lessons from, like, Spicer and Sanders. And maybe they realize, you know what, we really don't need to hold any press briefings ever, because what's the point? We get blasted. So anytime they just need to, like, a nice glossy sheen, they're going to bring her out. And I hate saying this, she's also has a particular look. She's younger. She's a woman. So usually Trump administration, as you know, puts out Kellyanne Conway or Hope Hicks to soften the message. And I feel like she's going to also serve that role, to let the bitter medicine go down easier. If you think I'm being incorrect on this, let me know.
Yeah, well, it's hard to see that how great of a spokeswoman she could be, given that she let Melania wear that I don't really care, do you jacket when she went down to the border.
Well, maybe, you know what? There's only so much someone can do. And then you just have to ride the wave. But, you know, someone said this, and I hope the press does, and I don't think they will, is the first question. And I saw this on Twitter. The first question someone said they should ask her is, does Melania Trump regret promoting the birther conspiracy theory? Because people kind of forget it wasn't just Donald. It was also Melania who promoted it, and she's never apologized for it. But the way the press is doing its job right now, both citing everything, I think they're going to give her a pass. And so we're just going to be subjected to more masochism for the next 2 years under Grisham.
Yeah. I mean, eventually you're going to have, like, three staffers doing all the jobs in the entire executive branch of the U.S. government. It'll be like Mulvaney, Rudnick Hope Hicks, and then maybe it'll be, well, no, at least four, because Stephen Miller will still be there being his little immigration imp that he is.
Do you think Hicks is coming back?
Probably not, but I bet that Trump wishes he could bring her back.
So it's basically going to be Pence, Grisham, Miller for sure. And then who else is left? You think Mulvaney?
I mean, isn't he like holding down the fort for like four different jobs at this point?
Yeah, he is. And I just want to repeat, we have no Secretary of Defense, ladies and gentlemen.
We don't have a lot of secretaries of a lot of things.
And Pompeo. I think Pompeo will be a survivor.
He might be, actually. He's really good at being a sycophant and then carrying on with his crusades to cause the Armageddon. So he'll probably be there as well. Okay, it'll be a dozen people that are still in the executive branch. And I'm not counting Jared or Ivanka.
Oh, yeah, and I think we did mention this on this show a while back, that Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, invoked the rapture. So when you say crusades, it's not a hyperbole when it comes to Pompeo.
Yeah. So congrats to Stephanie Grisham. I guess we'll see how she does compared to Spicer and Sanders.
It's a low bar. So at least that's good.
Yeah. And she is the reason she got the job is pretty clear. She has been a loyal foot soldier for quite a while now, both for Trump during the campaign and for a month or so after he was inaugurated. But she's been first lady's staff for a while now. And I mean, they trust her. That's what it comes down to, is she is trusted in this administration. That is prized above all else.
And that should remind you of how certain mafia organizations work and how dictatorships work. It's not about competency. It's about loyalty. Who's not going to be a rat? And the funny thing is they always think that Trump's going to be loyal to them. It's like, you don't learn. He throws everyone under the bus. Why do you think you are going to be the one who's going to be in his good graces?
Like, because he talks about loyalty all the time. Of course he'll be loyal.
even though he literally throws Michael Cohen, his right-hand man, under the bus, who, by the way, right now is in prison. And he throws Bannon under the bus. And he throws literally everyone under the bus.
Not literally everyone. Hope Hicks did not get bus thrown.
Well, it's because she's still loyal.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's kind of implied. That's a fair enough standard to have.
Even mob bosses have standards.
Yeah, that seems fair enough. Anyway, the other big news this week, is that there's only two things. One of the other many big things this week came in the form of a article published by E. Jean Carroll, a columnist who has a book coming out, in which she talked about a time from 1995, 1996, when she says that Donald Trump sexually assaulted her in the Bergdorf Goodman department store in New York. Now, you should go read her story. It's up on The Cut, I believe.
Yeah.
And from an academic perspective, it's been an interesting sort of microcosm of like how things are today and how the presidency is reported upon. Because in any other administration since 1920, maybe a bit later, and since any administration in our lifetimes, the president being accused of a sexual anything not involving his wife would be a big deal. But the president being accused of sexual assault and the allegations she's made describe a rape. That should have been, you'd expect to be front and center in every single news headline, just because that is itself inherently newsworthy. Unfortunately, in this world, a woman saying she was sexually assaulted by the president is not particularly uncommon, and apparently is only marginally newsworthy, because the response was not exactly crickets to it, but it was a very muted sort of coverage, pretty much across the board.
Yeah, very muted. I mean, it was barely trending for a few hours. It wasn't breaking news. It wasn't on the headlines. And it was only after writers and I think, podcasts and people on social media said, hey, how come this isn't trending the next day? That's when you actually saw some coverage, especially when E. Jean Carroll came out on CNN and gave an interview and gave specifics. But even then, I mean, this news has essentially died, even though her excerpt came out just a few days ago. And I always imagine if this was Obama. Like, literally imagine if a woman who's a very respected writer had a credible accusation of rape against the sitting president. Don't you think it would lead the cover story of the New York Times the next day?
To the extent you can't put aside the truth or falsity of it, putting aside that, the accusation itself is or would be huge news in any other administration. But to a certain degree, I mean, it's not wrong to say that it's less newsworthy. I mean, there have been 23 other accusations before this one, and none of those mattered. So what are the odds that this one's going to matter either?
And 2016, October, Access Hollywood tape got leaked where Trump brags openly about grabbing women by the you-know-what, and then he says, when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Yeah. And 53% of white women still voted for him, or was it 54%?
It was pretty over much, half.
Yeah, didn't matter. And I remember it was interesting. Right after that came out, I went to a Trump rally in Maine for Huffington Post, and I asked women specifically, about those allegations, and it was overwhelmingly pretty much every woman was a white woman there, except one Latina who was from Honduras, who said if Clinton won, she would go back to Honduras. And I'm like, what? Anyway, but every single woman there just did not seem at all disturbed by these allegations. And as we saw, it didn't affect him then. And like you mentioned, there's been nearly two dozen allegations, doesn't affect him. And that's what happens when a man like Trump becomes the commander in chief. Ugly, violent, vulgarian behavior becomes normalized. Yeah. We didn't even shrug. We're like, another woman. Oh, well. Oh, yeah, this is the same man who bragged about it.
Look, I love cats, but often they are terrible, exhaustive Satan incarnates, and they cause problems. Also, just before recording, my cat may or may not have escaped over the fence into our neighbor's yard, and it was a whole thing. So, I love cats. They're amazing. Parts of them are not. And one of those parts is litter. Kitty litter, to be exact. And that's why pretty litter is amazing, because pretty litter brings a bit more equality to the human-cat relationship. It's cats the best. They're great. It's fine. But kitty litter is one of the biggest downsides of having a cat. And pretty litter takes that away. Pretty litter uses naturally occurring minerals that trap and eliminate moisture, and it's virtually dust-free. There is no smell, no mess. It's almost like not having a cat, only you still have cuddles at night, so it's pretty good. And pretty litter weighs up to 80% less than the average bag of cat litter, and it lasts the entire month. It shipped right to your door with free 2-day shipping. So no more hauling heavy bags of cat litter up the stairs or cleaning messy, chalky, dusty litter boxes every day. But the best part is that pretty litter does so much for your cat's health, because pretty litter changes color to detect underlying illnesses before urgent medical care is needed, saving you money, stress, and potentially your cat's life. So do what Robbie and I did, and make the switch to pretty litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code 45th for 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. The New York Times coverage was interesting just because of how a perfect example it is of how the New York Times treats Me Too stories and also its coverage of Trump. The New York Times did end up covering the Carol story in its book section.
Yep.
And then in response to a lot of reader feedback, they published, I think yesterday, on Monday, a statement their readers sent her where they explained their reasoning and how the decision came about. And they insisted, I think probably truthfully, it had nothing to do with deference to the president. The reason they did not promote the story, like put it on their headline like it ought to have been, is not because they are trying to not hurt Trump's feelings or something. I think it's more about their internal culture. And they talked about how when the New York Times is publishing stories that it's breaking like certain standards it has about like how many witnesses it finds and whatnot, and what kind of original work it does to prove these allegations. And in this case, what the New York Times did is they spoke to E. Jean Carroll, and they spoke to the two women that she says she told about the incident back when it happened. And both of them confirmed the New York Times that, yes, she did tell us about this. One of them told her, let's go tell the police. He raped you. Let's go tell the police and report it. And the other one told her, he has 200 lawyers. Don't say anything. Don't tell anyone. He'll bury you.
Yeah.
And she ended up not coming forward. So even though it was able to verify these items and like confirm the story to that extent, the New York Times basically decided that because they weren't able to find any additional witnesses, since they couldn't do any further reporting beyond what others had already done, well, it's not really newsworthy. I mean, if the New York Times didn't break the story, did it even happen?
Yeah, but it's also BS because look at, we're going to both sides our way to a Trump re-election in 2020. Because if this doesn't merit even, you know, headline news, why does allegations of Biden, you know, caressing women merit the same type of attention, right?
And I'm fine with that. I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is what are the standards in society, right? Because if it's creepy behavior and women are disturbed by it and they bring it forward, fine, that's news. You know, if Biden apologized for it, I'm glad he did. Quasi apologized in a strange, weird Biden-esque way, which he really kind of didn't. But look, it was like a week's worth of media coverage, right? Remember that? Yeah. A week's worth of media storm.
As it should have been.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And here we have a credible accusation of rape by a well-respected writer, and you have witnesses, and you have Trump's response, which should have been even like bigger news. And his response, I believe, and we're recording this Tuesday, came out yesterday and Monday. He said, "She's not my type." That's his response to a rape allegation. "She's not my type," which makes you think, do you have a type for sexual assault and raping? What? Are you the president of the United States? What sane, moral, ethical human being responds to a rape allegation by saying, "She's not my type"? And even that got buried. And it's just Tuesday.
Yeah. And he also said that she made up the story and that he never even met her, despite the fact there's a photo of them together from 1987. I mean, this is what Trump always does. It's never like, oh, I wouldn't rape anyone. It's I wouldn't rape her.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, no, after you survive 23 different accusations, nothing bad happens to you. Is there any amount of accusations will make a difference? I don't think so. I do not think that there's any amount of women who can come forward that will change his supporters' inability to care about it. Now, if there was some kind of like video proof, or if the person making the allegation was someone in a position that was made the story more inherently newsworthy, then maybe that would make a difference. I'm not saying that there's no universe in which Trump could be politically harmed by a sexual assault allegation. I'm just saying that all these regular women he's sexually assaulted coming forward is not going to change anything.
Yeah, and I just want to mention two things real quick. In 2016, he said the same exact thing when a woman accused him of putting his hand up her skirt while on an airplane. He said, "Believe me, she would not be my first choice. That I can tell you." And he said that to supporters at a campaign event, and they applauded him. And also, 1991, Ivana Trump, his former wife, made allegations in a sworn deposition that she was raped by Trump during their marriage. She later backtracked it, but you know, many say she got again bullied by the lawyers and said
settlement,
and it wasn't rape. But she still says she felt violated. But you should go back and read that description. I mean, it's terrifying. It's harrowing. It's rape. He pulled her hair out in clumps, and he wanted to punish her because apparently he relied upon the same plastic surgeon that botched up something. So as retribution or retaliation, he physically hurt her and raped her, tore out clumps of her hair. And she, in the sworn deposition, said that he raped her. And then that story was buried as well. So I agree with you. I don't think anything's going to happen. But I do think if there was any sexual story about like a boy, or anything that could like imply like a gay relationship, that might take away a few voters.
I don't think so. I mean, if it was proven, then yes, there's plenty of this base that wouldn't support him. But I don't think the allegation itself would be taken any more with more concern than anything else. I don't think that's the factor here. If you go through all the stories, it is clear that there is like a recurring pattern here, though. A lot of them describes like they get alone with him for a second, and he forcibly kisses them or gropes them. Or there's the women who are the girls who were at his, you know, his pageants that he kept walking in on.
Right. Those stories. I mean, yeah. If you add up those stories, that takes it above two dozen.
But here's the problem, of course. And with reporting on these stories, obviously it's not a concern this time around because no one's even reporting it in the first place. When you do have, I mean, most of the sexual abusers that we've seen in the Me Too movement, they usually do have multiple accusers because that makes it easier to prove. In Trump's case, there are 24 now. The odds of them all being false are nil. But the odds of some of them being false aren't terrible. And for each account that comes out, yes, the press does have to be guarded and to evaluate the claims like they would for any other allegation being made against anyone. But in this case, they're not even being guarded so much as they're just discounting altogether. But I keep thinking back about Kavanaugh and the Kavanaugh hearings. Oh, God, fucking Michael Avenatti. I think that they were seriously derailed because you had two women with credible witness backed up stories about now Justice Kavanaugh. And then you had Michael Avenatti come forward with a client who made allegations that very much appear to have been false. And her involvement in it was used to discredit the other two women whose stories were entirely credible. And of course, in the Trump case, all it takes is one woman to have her story disproven, and that will be used to discredit all of them, to the extent anyone cares if they're discredited or not in the first place.
No, I think it's not just the Trump era. It's the bad faith actions by Republicans, right? And the both siding of everything. And so there's one flaw. They go, aha, see? Bias, flaw, fake news, lies. And then the rest of us go, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And then we overcorrect. So what do you do when you have, say, one side, which is the majority, trying to have some rules and ethics, and another side that really kind of doesn't care, but jumps on that one mistake, the Avenattis, the one bad, like, you know, one of the two dozen women who comes out and doesn't have, might have like a incorrect story, which then is used to discount everything else. And
I mean, the media keeps right doing now. Its jobs, what they should do.
That's what I'm saying.
That the stories. Don't. Well, I mean, the bigger concern for me is that they're actually just not paying attention at all. I wish we were having a conversation about how the media was addressing the claims, but instead the conversation is about how the media is not addressing them at all in any respect, let alone a question of whether they found them credible or not. It's just pure not new status.
Yeah, because you could easily say a new allegation. That's factual. It's an allegation. It's not confirmed. You know, we don't know if we don't have any evidence aside from her testimony and two others who vouch for her, but that's a story. Yeah. Here is a credible allegation, and we just won't care. And I think you're right. I think it goes back to, you know, if two dozen stories have come and gone and we haven't even included like the Miss USA allegations and we don't even include Access Hollywood, why will America care? It won't. It won't care.
Well, to go back to the most recent accusations prior to the ones from E. Jean Carroll, a former Trump staffer in Florida, Alva Johnson, said in February that Trump had forcibly kissed her when they were alone together, much like many of the other people reported. Women reported about in their times with Trump before the campaign. Alva Johnson filed suit. However, in about last week, the judge dismissed it on valid grounds. The court found that, quote, as currently stated, the complaint presents a political lawsuit, not a tort and wages lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Plaintiff will receive a fair day in court, but the court will try a tort and wages dispute, not a political one. If plaintiff wishes to make a political statement or bring a claim for political purposes, this is not the forum. And the judge isn't wrong here. And the way that her claim was stated based on equal pay issues and the forcible kiss, that was not how the claims were presented in her complaint, which was very much focusing on the wider universe of sexual assault allegations against Trump. So yeah, no, a court is not the place to bring these claims either, unfortunately. So there's really not any place other than the media for this stuff to make a difference. Or theoretically, and before, you know, a criminal investigation, but that's obviously not going to happen. So yeah, the media is the one place where these claims could possibly matter, and they no longer do. So
can I say one quick thing about the media? I've always said that Trump's main battleground is the media. That's his main theater of war. And if you really want to take him down, that's one of the places where you can take him down, right? Which is why it's just strategically, I've said this before on the podcast, impeachment proceedings would actually be a way to go on the offensive, because impeachment proceedings, if they really started initiated, would be 24/7 news, cable TV, and he'd be on the back foot, right? It's in addition to, of course, the fact that he should be, you know, have accountability and oversight, and I think it's long overdue for impeachment proceedings to start. But there's also another strategic offensive if you really understand Trump, number one. And number two, this is the other thing. You have to starve Trump because he, like, thrives off of media attention, but he's also the president of the United States, which also brings another dilemma, right? Like, because if you completely starve him, you know, we might have war with Iran. But at the same time, you have to use that media platform aggressively and strategically to make him look like a buffoon, to challenge him, to do follow-ups. And I feel like, I'm sorry, like, don't you think like U.S. journalists just fail in the last 3 years when it comes to interviewing Trump or challenging him on any of this stuff? I think they do.
Robbie isn't here this episode, but if she was, right now she'd be telling you how much she freaking loves Ritual. Ritual is the obsessively researched vitamin for women, and Rabia was a huge fan from the get-go, and she recruited me. Because we all want to do the right thing to keep our bodies healthy in the long run, but even when we try really hard to eat kale salads and drink green smoothies, parentheses, I don't try that hard to do that, but yeah, we're still most likely not getting all the essential nutrients that we need. And that's why Ritual is so great. It's just two easy to take capsules a day to provide 9 nutrients that you need to support a strong foundation for your health. So if you're like me and you don't pay enough attention, or any attention, to whether you're eating the foods that give you the nutrients you need to function well, try Ritual. Because from D3 to omega-3, Ritual's Essential for Women helps fill in the gaps in our diets. And their no-nausea capsule is gentle on empty stomachs. Plus, there's a mint tab in every bottle to keep things fresh, so you don't get that fishy aftertaste that's common with most omega-3s. Better health doesn't happen overnight, and right now Ritual's offering our listeners 10% off during their first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/45th to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/45th. All right, so on to Iran, which we are currently not at war with. Hopefully this streak of not being at war with them will keep on trucking on. But we got pretty close this week. Now, to back up a bit and give a bigger picture of how we've gotten where we are today, go back a year to May 2018 when Trump decided to unilaterally terminate the Iran nuclear deal. Now, this was a deal that went into place in 2015 under Obama and was aimed at, one, putting in safeguards to stop any Iranian development of nuclear weapons, while, two, allowing Iran to become integrated with the global economy to some degree. Trump has hated the agreement since it existed, before it existed even. He's been ranting since 2015 about all the money that Obama allegedly gave to Iran, even though it was their money in the first place. And if we hadn't done it, we probably would have lost a lot more money in a settlement, or not in a settlement, in a ruling against us for not giving Iran back its money. So yeah. But when it pulled out without a basis, Iran was complying with it. The Trump administration complained about, what was the phrase he used? Like, Iran's technical compliance with the treaty. As if, like, technical actual compliance with the treaty was not sufficient. No, that's kind of how treaties work. Well, Europe didn't like it. There was a lot of conflict there because Europe wants to be able to be economically integrated with Iran. But Trump persisted. The past year has involved...
But he persisted.
Yes.
That should be the new kid's book. But Trump persisted.
Now, in 2015, when the deal went into place, Iran's economy grew by leaps and bounds. It was finally able to actually take place in the global market. But after these sanctions, it's now in a recession. It's in economic peril. I mean, the sanctions are working to the extent you define working as causing pain to Iran. He is succeeding in doing that. Primarily, it's been through sanctions on Iran's ability to export oil, which is the main revenue source for the country. And at the start of the year, before the newest round of sanctions went into place, it was basically about 10 to 15 million barrels of oil a week that Iran was moving out. At our current state, that number's been cut by at least 2/3 and possibly more. There's about 4 to 5 million barrels a week being transported, but a lot of that's actually internal transport. It's not even going out to export on the world market. So there's no outside money coming in from that, which means that the revenue for the entire Iranian government it's been slashed and burned. And in 2019, the current forecasts have a 6% decrease in their economy compared to last year. That's massive. That's huge. That is a sign of economy that's in deep peril. And to top that all off, Iran is now staring down 50% inflation. And for many Iranian citizens, they talk about it like they're already in a wartime economy. So the Trump administration has succeeded in pushing Iran into the brink of a crisis, their goal being to force Iran to the table to talk to them. Or alternatively, if you're Bolden, you're hoping that this will cause enough pain and strife for the average Iranian citizen that they will rise up and overthrow their leaders and cause regime change from within, which is never going to happen, but that's one of, you know, Bolden's far-fetched hopes. But really, the real goal here from the U.S. side is to get leverage over Iran, to force them to come back to the negotiation table begging, to force them to come asking for relief. So far, it's not working out that way. Recently, Iran announced that it would resume its nuclear enrichment program and it would be accelerating uranium enrichment to 3.7%, which is above the level set by the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear agreement, of 3.67%. Now, enrichment at this level is enough for domestic energy production purposes. It is not enough to make the bomb. So that's not what this increase is doing. However, they are openly and deliberately breaking the Iran nuclear agreement, which Trump already withdrew from. So that is provocative behavior. Or at least Trump will see it that way and is seeing it that way. What also happened in May last month, we had four different tankers that were through the Strait of Hormuz that were attacked by presumably Iran. These attacks were aimed at disabling, not destroying the ships. And it seemed the general intelligence seems to have confirmed, both from the U.S. and other and our allies, seems to have all confirmed that it was Iran behind it. And then last week or 2 weeks ago, we had two more tankers attacked. These were the most recent round of attacks. They were more serious in nature. The ships were more thoroughly disabled. And the U.S. has announced that Iran was responsible. It does seem like the other allies are accepting the intelligence assessments. The UK, I believe, confirmed it, and so did a few others. So it does appear to have been Iran, although there's certain questions that are still floating about. Now, why would Iran do this? Well, they are in a bad place right now, and they have very few tools available to them to respond. But it does have something called the Strait of Hormuz, which is right next to its territory, and 20% of the world's entire supply of crude oil goes through there. Now, if they shut down the Strait, that would cause a global financial crisis. It would cause real shortages in oil, and it would cause prices to skyrocket. So if the goal, well, the Iran's goal right now is to find a way to get leverage, to get the U.S. and the world back to the table on terms that Iran finds acceptable. So by threatening the world's oil supply, that's a tool that's pretty effective. Unfortunately, it cannot play that card outright, because if it did actually just shut down the whole strait, U.S. military would intervene, there'd be conflict, there'd be war, but Iran probably not succeed in keeping it shut down for particularly long. So that's why it is taking this route, presumably, by attacking the tankers, because that alone is sufficient to cause oil prices to increase, to cause instability in the global oil market. And by doing this, by doing these smaller scale attacks, they can achieve their goal of harming the shipping lanes, but in a way that's plausibly deniable, sort of, and is less likely to cause a massive military retaliation. Interestingly, so far, it does not appear to be working. There has been some increase in oil prices, but not to the extent that would have been expected. And definitely the ceiling markets are really taking into account a serious risk of the Strait of Hormuz being closed or shipping being affected by military action in the region. So Iran's strategy is so far not quite working. Then we have last week. Last week, there was a drone, an American drone, shot down somewhere over the Strait of Hormuz. That somewhere matters a lot, because this drone was either shot down in Iranian airspace, territorial waters of Iran, like it says, or it was slightly over to the west, outside of Iranian territorial waters. So yeah, this drone is a surveillance drone. It's not like one of your, you know, buy a drone and go fly it for fun kind of deal. It's a $130 million drone. This is a big investment, a big piece of military hardware that has now been lost. And the day after, this was on Thursday, well, this was Wednesday day our time. And by Thursday day our time, Trump had apparently planned to respond to it by ordering a military response. And from the accounts that we have now, they had not actually launched any kind of attack yet. But things were, like, what was Trump's quote? Locked and loaded? Cocked and loaded.
Cocked and loaded. Cocked and loaded.
When he called it off, he said, never mind, don't do it. Now, his public reason through Twitter, what he claimed about why he didn't go forward with it, is that he was told finally, last minute, about the number of human casualties likely to result from this attack. And apparently he heard for the first time the number of 150 people likely to die. And he decided that was too many. It was not proportional, given that an unmanned drone was shot down. So he decided not to go ahead and do the attack. Now, it's really unclear if that did play a role in it, because he was told much sooner than that how many casualties were expected, and he proceeded anyway. Now, it's possible he just didn't hear or didn't pay attention and only found out later and then was like, oh, maybe let's not do it. It's really not clear. But here's how he tweeted it out. He said, quote, on Monday, they shot down an unnamed drone flying international waters. We were cocked and loaded to retaliate last night on three different sites. When I asked how many will die, 150 people, sir, was the answer from General. 10 minutes before the strike, I stopped it. God, it's another sir story. He loves his sir stories. I'm surprised this like wasn't like a general came up to him and said, sir, with tears in his eyes.
Continue. This is a good a recap for those following. There's some more.
And so then the other stories that we had to come out, like Pence's line, it's not so much about the number of lives that we lost, but that apparently they learned at the last minute that, quote, we're not convinced that it was authorized at the highest levels of the Iranian government. And essentially they told Trump last minute, like, oh, we don't believe that the guys who authorized the strike were the like you know ones in charge of Iran. So Trump heard that. It's like, oh, I guess I'll have to fight back then. I guess that was not something they intentionally did to humiliate me, so maybe I don't have to respond militarily. So yeah, that was how the sort of war with Iran did not actually happen.
But there's, you know, what's also interesting is reports have come out that the person who took him off the ledge was Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson is our acting Secretary of Defense.
Really?
Yeah, it was Tucker Carlson. So Tucker Carlson is a Fox News host, for those of you who don't know. And again, I'll mention that we have no acting Secretary of Defense. And Tucker Carlson was reminding him how a war would actually be unpopular and hurt his base. That being said, there was a competing vision by the other Secretary of Defense, Sean Hannity.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank God that Tucker Carlson had the Trump's ear that night.
Yeah, so thank God the white nationalist Tucker Carlson beat the military impulses of the patriotic Sean Hannity. And that was one of the major reasons why Trump backed down. Also, Trump has committed 1,000 additional troops to the region. That's also yesterday said there's going to be new sanctions on Iran. And when he mentioned the new sanctions, he invoked Ayatollah Khomeini. For those of you who have paid attention to the last 30 years, Khomeini died in 1989.
His estate can be sanctioned.
Yeah, Khomeini.
That'll really show them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who knows? It's all good. Tomato, Khomeini, Khatami, whatever. And apparently we're going to use Sergeant Slaughter and, you know, Chuck Norris as our alpha strike team in Iran to attack Tehran. And apparently they're going to respond with the Iron Sheik and the Camel Clutch. For those of you listening and appreciate my 80s pop culture references, I'll be here all week. But what's also fascinating...
Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, exactly. Sergeant Slaughter might be actually our new Secretary of Defense.
Yeah. So we have Trump who is calling off the war and things are a little bit of a lull, but he does impose new sanctions. These sanctions are against the supreme leader of Iran and eight military leaders in Iran who are allegedly responsible for the drone strike. Now, whether these new sanctions will have any real effect is debatable. They're largely just a matter of show. They're not the same kind of sanctions like the ones on the actual economy of Iran that are caused damage to Iran as a whole. So the Iranian leaders responded by saying, as the articles first quoted it, him saying it was the Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, slammed the U.S. sanctions against Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei as, quote, outrageous and idiotic because the cleric had no assets abroad in the first place. And then said, this is how it was originally translated in our media, quote, the White House actions mean it is mentally retarded. Now, I've seen a few corrections where... they've now used the phrase mentally handicapped, which is a more accurate translation of the words he used. It sounds like he never said mentally retarded. He just said like mentally handicapped. And that was how some translators decided the word should be rendered. So any slur by the use of the word retarded does not appear to be intentional. Regardless, Trump, I don't think that alone is going to change Trump's opinion on Iran saying things about him. He was pretty pissed about it. And he went on a tweet storm because that's what the president does when he gets insulted.
And the tweet storm was that he was threatened to obliterate Iran. And again, we have no Secretary of Defense. And also, in addition, when asked if he has an exit strategy, Trump said he doesn't need an exit strategy. And also another diss, may I bring this diss up, by Iran. Iran's foreign affairs minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, said that we're dealing with America's B team. So that was also there that didn't get that much play. But apparently, as of today, Trump has threatened to obliterate Iran if it attacks anything American. Let me repeat that. If Iran attacks anything American, Trump will obliterate Iran. How will this play out, Susan? It will not play out well. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's also possible that nothing will happen. I mean, it is clear that Trump does not inherently desire a land war anywhere. He does not want to deal with the consequences of an actual wartime encounter. Like the strikes he called on in Syria, yes, like an isolated fireworks display, that he'll do. But his instincts are clearly not to go start wars with people, which is, I mean, it's better than the alternative. I'll take it. Unfortunately, the people around him do not have those same instincts, and they are lobbying hard for a war to happen. I think that alone probably would not overcome Trump's fear of getting involved in an extended conflict. And I think the fact that Russia is so opposed to this war, obviously, because Iran's their ally, is also going to weigh against an actual conflict occurring. So the basic positioning would suggest that maybe conflict could be avoided. Well, not conflict, but maybe actual military engagements could be avoided here. The problem is they're no longer in control of what's happening. We are at an impasse. We have all these competing demands against each other, and no one knows what Trump is going to do. They cannot gamify this. They cannot predict his reactions to everything. They cannot predict how he's going to respond to certain events. That breaks the whole process down. That makes war much more likely. I think what could happen in the coming weeks is that Iran may do something, again, another attack on another tanker, not a U.S. tanker probably, but maybe that won't matter. If they do something that humiliates Trump, that Trump sees as an intentional act by the Iranian leadership to humiliate him, I think that there's no stopping him. He will call in some military strike. It will spiral from there. So, yeah, basically, whether or not we start another war or another war gets started by someone depends on whether or not Trump feels like he's being laughed at.
Which is why I recommend Iran's President Rouhani just write a love letter to
that
Trump.
That would honestly solve this.
If you remember that, I mean, people kind of forget.
No one forgets because he brings up all the time. Trump talks all those stupid letters all the goddamn time.
No, but I'm saying right before that, remember there was a button off with Kim Jong-un and Rocket Man, and we were like, oh, we might go to war with North Korea. And then all of a sudden now there's love letters, and he's like, you know, his Kim Jong-un's best friend. And, you know, he's taking Kim Jong-un's word over his own intelligence agencies about the murder of Otto Warmbier, a U.S. student. So Rouhani just needs to, like, you know, invoke some Rumi, get some Farsi in there, some beautiful poetry, write a nice little letter to Trump. And then Trump will be eating shawarma out of his hands.
That's what Trump wants.
That's probably the best way.
He basically was telegraphing to Iran how to play us out to him. He wants to have the pageantry of another summit, this time with the Iranian leaders. He wants them to participate in his display of negotiation skill. And they can come together as friends and write each other Farsi poetry and love letters. But that is not going to happen with Iran. He thinks it is. It is not. Instead of love letters, they call him mentally handicapped. So his current strategy of having North Korea summit 2.0 ain't going to work here. The question is whether he's okay with that stasis or if he feels laughed at and all hell breaks loose. But yeah.
But the thing is, this also is Iran is not suicidal, right? Iran is very aggressive.
They aren't, but they're being pushed into.
But that's what I'm saying. This is all about escalation. And Iran also has pride. It has its own base. They're not going to be seen as weak. And you know what? They kind of have a quasi upper hand here because the other countries are still in the Iran nuclear deal. They have Putin as an ally. They have Syria. And they know Trump is stuck, right? It's in their interest to make Trump and the United States look like buffoons, look weak, look impotent. And I would not be surprised if they just kind of it's like when you just, you're a habitual line stepper. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a couple of line steps here, like some saber rattling, right? Because why not? What is Trump going to do? He can't actually engage in a full-on war. His base doesn't want it. He knows there's no appetite for it. He could probably do some strikes, but he knows there's going to be escalation. And so in a strange way, even though there's sanctions in Iran, even though their economy is being hurt, I still feel they do have the upper hand and they know how to rattle him. You know, I think that was very deliberate, you know, the mental retardation tweet, the fact that he's, you know, Sharif says it's the B team, the fact that they know that there's not an international appetite for war, the fact that they know that allies really aren't behind Trump, the fact that they know the intelligence communities aren't really behind Trump because Trump isn't behind his own intelligence communities. It again only weakens us and weakens Trump and weakens America. And I just go back to this point. If Trump had done nothing and simply stayed in the Iran nuclear treaty, the United States would be more powerful and have more influence and leverage over Iran. But Trump corrupts everything. And so here we are without a Secretary of Defense, where Tucker Carlson, a Fox News host, has potentially kept us out of war. Thank you, Tucker, for that one patriotic duty you've done for this country. And you are not forgiven for all the other crap that you do on a daily basis.
Well, thanks for that thing. Appreciate it for real. That one thing.
Yeah, on the field, Tucker. Thanks so much.
Yeah, so in my worst nightmare, we're going to see a scenario where after Trump now tweeted today, Iran's going to be obliterated if they do anything. We're going to have Iran come back and be like, nah, Trump won't do that. He's just kidding. He's a weak idiot. We're laughing at him. What would Trump do? Would that send him to war? That might. And the problem for Iran is they don't have the choice to do nothing. They can't sit back here. Their economy is in a vice. It is being destroyed. The people are living, again, like in wartime economic conditions. They don't have the option just to not do anything. They have to do something. Bolton's goal, or alleged goal, is it causes pain and bring him to the negotiation table. But that's not their only response that they can do. That's one of them. That is not the one they're taking right now. So despite Trump's instincts to be against wars, and despite Russia making it clear they don't want Trump to do this, I think it's possible things are going to get worse from here.
Basically, they have to make Trump sign the Iran nuclear treaty without calling it that. So maybe you call it like the Iran nuclear treaty great again, initiated by Trump. So basically what you have to do with Trump, because it's all about his ego, is you have to give credit to the arsonist for bringing water to the fire that he started. And if Iran can play it and diplomatically give him that type of credit, which is like what Kim Jong-un did, right? Then they've alleviated a crisis. But the problem is you have Bolton and war hawks who desperately want a regime change, whereas you kind of don't have that as much with North Korea. And you have the rampant, you know, anti-Muslim bias and the Islamophobia. And so that also factors into it. The Pompeos, the Boltons, you know, Israel, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Trump's fickle ego. But I still feel like our original analysis is the correct one, is that if Rouhani just sends a poem to Trump, all shall be well.
Bolton will totally like intercept it and like tear it into tiny pieces. And the Valentine will never get there.
He'll eat it.
Trump walks into the Oval Office and sees Bolton there, like with like paper, like confetti in his mustache. He's like, Bolton, what happened? He's like, it definitely wasn't from Iran.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, Bolton speaks Farsi for the next 2 weeks.
So yeah, that's our two ways out of this. One, love letters for Rouhani. Or two, just make the JCPOA, only call it the TCPOA, the Trump Comprehensive Plan of Action.
That would work.
And we can call it a day and just stay at peace. So, yeah.
But at least for right now at 5:17 p.m., there is no war with Iran.
And knock on wood, one more week of that. And we'll come back next week with you to episode of the 45th, hopefully not about the Iranian military conflict.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.